It's 9:17, and welcome to the program. It's the Mornings with Ed show, and just as we were ready to go on with Steve Dichtereau at 9 a.m., power here throughout the entire block, I'm finding out, on between Pearl Street and Diamond Street on Coast Highway went down, the radio station down temporarily, but Steve Dichtereau got to see our generator in action and how it works. This morning, we welcome the city council member. He's the mayor pro tem. He is running for re-election, and we thank him for his patience, first of all, and for coming in. Good morning, Steve Dichtereau.
Good morning, Ed. How are you?
Having a great morning. Thank you. Are you able to hear me in there? Okay.
The sound level is perfect.
Okay, perfect. Glad you're here.
Yeah, people don't realize we're separated because of COVID.
Yes, we're in two completely separate studios. We can see each other, but we're separated by that glass that Superman had to be behind when the kryptonite was on the other side. We welcome you. And I've got to ask you, the very first question that comes to mind is, when the people that know you, what would they say about you? The people that know you best, what would they say about Steve Dichtereau?
I think that the major thing people will say about me is that I care a lot and I'm sincere.
Okay. Yeah. I would say that. I would say that too. And the,
and what you see is what you get. For better or for worse.
Okay. All right. And you decided to run again. Why did you decide to run again? And was the decision-making process and running again different than last time?
Yeah, it was very different from last time, because I needed to step back and look at the big picture. First of all, the question is, do I still enjoy being on the council? Do I still have that energy and enthusiasm? And I needed to ask that question to myself. And there's simply no doubt about it. I simply love serving on the council, and I want to continue doing it, and I have the strength and the energy and the enthusiasm to do it. And the next question I had for myself, and this was kind of the most important question, is, does it matter if I'm on the council? And I hope it doesn't sound too egotistical, but I think I make a difference. I think that my being on the council has affected the direction that this town has gone. Some people may not like that, but most people have liked that. But I feel that anybody who watches a city council meeting can see and can hear that my input, my analysis, my observations, my agenda bills have affected the direction that this town has taken, and I think it's taken it in a good direction.
Okay. And following that point, you seem to also like the minutiae of what you do. There is a lot of minutiae involved. Where did you learn to love the minutiae of government service?
Well, I'm not sure I agree with that conclusion. I think I might be reasonably good at the minutiae. I really care much more about the big picture and the philosophical underpinnings of the things that we do, because the philosophical underpinnings not only guide us on a particular situation, they guide us to new situations, which I think for a voter is extremely important, because issues come and go.
Right.
And so, yeah, all the candidates will tell you where their positions are today. The really important question is, when different things come up, how are you going to react to it? And how predictable is it as to the direction that you're going to go? And so those big picture philosophical policy-oriented underpinnings, I think, are really the most important thing. And that's what's most interesting to me. I do find the minutiae sometimes to be difficult, because you really have to focus and concentrate. But as Tony Eisman reminds me all the time, the devil's in the details.
Right.
So it's important not to skim over the details. It's important not to skim over the minutiae. But in terms of just subjectively, it's not my favorite part.
Okay. And with the exception of a six-year hiatus that you took, you've been in government service for, 30 years?
Yeah, and actually, I started by joining the North Laguna Community Association. That's an organization I don't think that exists anymore. But I started that in 1989 when my wife got pregnant with our daughter, because I felt that at that point I had made the decision: this is where we're going to live, this is where we're going to raise her, and whether I'm happy or not with how the town is being run, I don't really have much right from my perspective to complain much unless I get myself involved. And as I got more and more involved, I got more interested in wanting to serve on the city council.
Right. And how has the job itself changed since the first time you were in office?
Well, obviously the world has changed.
Right.
And so issues come and go, but right. issues change all the time. At the same time, there are certain issues that are constant. The question of development, overdevelopment, et cetera, that's a constant struggle in Laguna Beach.
Right.
The question of public safety has always been an issue, but it becomes even more of an issue as the county continues to grow and as beachgoers come here more and more for a variety of reasons. Social media, right. I've been told recently by one of the members of the Marine Safety Department that the iPhone has been a major factor in helping people from outside of town identify those little-known beaches, right. which is having a dramatically adverse impact on the quality of life for our residents.
Right.
And so things have sort of gotten more intense over time. I also think that the tenor of public discussion has changed dramatically,
right.
that we used to, even when we very strongly disagreed with each other, we did it in a more civil way. But I think we, unfortunately, are taking the cue from what's been going on in the national scene, and things have become less and less civil and less pleasant dealing with people. Whether they're on your side or not, it's a lot less pleasant. That's unfortunate.
Right. And I find... Now that you bring that up, we'll be discussing that in depth in just a little bit. But I find you, again, when I mentioned the minutia and that you're into what you do, it does seem that you also have a pleasant take about you. And 30 years ago, that was one of your qualities that you jumped into politics with. Do you find yourself becoming jaded now?
Depends how you define jaded.
Okay.
If you mean my expectations for how other people act...
Yeah.
Somewhat. I have lower expectations of how people will act. If you mean, and it'll therefore affect my behavior, I hope most people would agree that it has not affected my behavior because I want to live my life in a certain way.
Right.
And I want that lifestyle to be more of a cooperative effort when I deal with people rather than a competitive or angry effort. Right. And so I'm not going to change myself because everything around me is changing. And when I say everything, it's really not the majority of people that we deal with. But it doesn't take many
right.
to make it really unpleasant.
Right. If 30% of the people throughout your day screw up your day, then that's 30% that shouldn't yeah. be right.
Well, yeah. I think the number would be a lot lower than that, but I can tell you that... that council members kind of shiver at the beginning of meetings when there's going to be public yeah. comment, because most people come up and say things that are based on merit or give or let the public know what's going on. But some people are just, for lack of a better phrase, mean-spirited and angry. And,
right.
and I'm not sure, by the way, that the best way to be persuasive with council members or with anybody is to have that kind of angry tone. I think that there's a natural instinct to discount the merits of what somebody's saying based on the tone in which they say it.
As you walk around the city and you talk to people, are you finding that to be a huge discussion, that most citizens are talking about the decorum happening right now?
Surprisingly, no. There have been. I've so far, I believe I've been to approximately 1,700 homes.
Okay.
Hoping to get to another 3,000 before the campaign is over.
Okay.
But I would say I could count on one hand the number of people who've discussed the lack of civility. I'm not saying that it's not in the forefront of their minds, but there are much bigger issues to them, because in some ways that lack of civility, although very relevant, is somewhat trivial compared to what's going on in their lives on a daily basis.
Right.
And so when they are concerned that outside people coming into their neighborhoods are creating dirt, leaving behind disgusting things,
right.
Affecting their public safety, they're much more concerned about what's happening in their daily lives than they are the periodic observing of the lack of civility.
Right. Now, this last term that you've had in office, what city council decision would you say that you're the most proud of in these last few years?
Well, you know, frankly, there are quite a few, but... I had an agenda bill within the last 2 years to increase the resources for the police department. Crime has come down as a result by 16% in an environment where we're under even more attack. That I'm really proud about that. But then you take something like my agenda bill to ban the use of rodenticides by the city.
Right.
And I'm very much an animal rights advocate, so I'm very proud of that. But my efforts led to saving our bus system, led to saving the digester, have helped save the community garden. initiating litigation against the county because they were failing to provide a wildlife corridor between here and Irvine where they were doing some development. So really, and saving the pepper tree in front of City Hall, which right. which could seem somewhat superficial, but I think it's a reflection on the heritage of the town.
Right. And I was talking about this a couple of weeks back with the mayor in that now Lieutenant Jim Cota, who was formerly...
Just got promoted. Right. He's a great guy. I did a ride-along with him a number of years ago. And I've got to tell you something. I got together with now Lieutenant Cota at approximately 5 in the afternoon.
Right.
We stayed on the shift till 4 in the morning. It was a Friday night, right. just before the summer. We wanted to get a quick bite to eat. It wasn't possible.
Right.
It was nonstop the entire night from one thing to another, which from my perspective leads to the conclusion we do need more resources for the department.
Okay. Now, mentioning him... he mentioned in the newspaper the other day that we forget the fact that we live in a hamlet, a small little hamlet anymore. Those days are over. You feel the same way?
I think that to say that we're a town of 23,000 people is being blind to what's going on. Right. The fact is we get about 6.5 million people a year coming to town. 95% of them are day trippers. They don't leave any money behind. Just last weekend, I came out on a Saturday morning. My entire front area was strewn with garbage. And it was what was really frustrating. It was McDonald's bags. At least if it had been Jack in the Box, maybe they would have left some money behind in our town. But
right.
they brought in their stuff from outside. They come to our neighbors. They're disrespectful to the fact that this is where we live, and they treat us like a garbage heap.
Yeah, I've seen, you know, it gets as bad as seeing a discarded dirty diaper in the parking lot of Gelson's. It gets
There are some even more disgusting things that have been left behind, including human waste.
Right. Yeah. Over the next 4 years, should you win this election, what's the biggest challenge that we face here in town?
Well, going back to what I was just saying, the single biggest challenge is how to deal with the 95% day trippers and the impact they're having on our quality of life. Now, you might think it's only the people that live near the beach. Well, all the flatland areas absolutely are being bothered. But it's also in the hill areas as well. So up in top of the world, Alta Laguna Park and the trails near there are getting a tremendous influx of people coming to town. Moulton Meadows, tremendous influx of people coming to town
right.
because they're finding out about these things through social media and their iPhones. And so I'm not sure, other than those who live in a gated community, I'm not sure anybody is unaffected by this. And I'm not even talking about the traffic and congestion and
right.
the parking. I'm talking about their actual impact on our daily quality of life.
Well, so you've identified it. What do we do about it?
When you analyze this, there really are two things that need to be done. It's easy to state it, not so easy to do.
Right.
You have to do two things in order to address this problem. And if you fail to do either or both, the problem will continue to go and it'll exacerbate. First, we need to get parking out of our neighborhoods for people from outside. We need to have a neighborhood parking sticker program. Right now, Coastal Commission will not let us do that.
Okay.
And they have jurisdiction to tell us we can't. I believe that if we sit down and work with them, that by creating multiple small parking facilities from one end of Coast Highway to the other in Laguna Beach, by doing that, we can work a deal with them that says that we can have the neighborhood parking program to the extent that we replace that parking one for one in these parking facilities. If we get people out of our neighborhood, I don't know that their behavior will be any better in the parking facilities, but at least it won't be on your front lawn. And the second thing is we simply don't have the resources as of now with the police department, et cetera, to enforce all the rules. So all you have to do, for example, is go down to Victoria Beach on a Friday night, right. hang out, Coast Highway, go down to the beach, come back, etc. You'll see the influx of people parking there. You'll see them jaywalking.
Right.
You'll see them abusing the beach area. And this is right where people are living.
Right.
And so if we had enough resources and we could have monitoring of what's going on, I think we have some chance of getting compliance with what our rules are. But our police force is dispersed far too widely for the number of people. Now, this wasn't the case 30 years ago. because when the day trippers came, they concentrated in the downtown Main Beach and Heisler Park area. Right. But again, because of social media, because of the increased population, iPhones, etc., everybody knows where everything is. Right. And so it has dispersed and spread throughout the town.
Okay, and what about Visit Laguna? Is there something that they can do and put on their website?
Well, I think it's critical that Visit Laguna focus on people who come to town to stay at the hotels primarily,
right,
and also to use the galleries, the other businesses, the restaurants, etc. There should be no focus whatsoever on the day trippers.
Right.
I don't think they do that.
Right.
But I think it's incumbent on them to be conscious of the fact that they can have a beneficial effect on us, but they could have a detrimental effect. Right. The beneficial effect is this. The 5% that come to town that do stay in the hotels and spend money here provide 30% of the revenue of the town. Okay. Now, if you play around with the numbers, manipulate the numbers a little and see how it works out, that 5%
right,
turns out to be the equivalent of 1,000 permanent residents in town. So 1,000 permanent residents effectively pay 30% of our budget, while the rest of us who actually live here, 23,000, are paying the remainder 70%. So that 5% is more than carrying its weight. And we hear people always talking in terms of, well, the tourists ought to be paying their fair share.
Right.
With the day trippers, it's very hard. There are constitutional guarantees that they have a right to come here.
Okay.
So whether we can get more money from them is questionable. But what we can do is lessen their impact on our daily lives.
Right. Now, I want to go back to Visit Laguna for a second. Would you ever consider, or would the council consider maybe having them no longer putting on their website where our tide pools are and things like that? Because that's for day trippers.
Yeah, I think anything we can do
right,
to minimize the advertising
right,
of the air, those kind of beach areas and tide pool areas is a beneficial thing. I mean, the only thing I think it's reasonable to be guiding people towards Main Beach, downtown, and Heisler, because if we concentrate where people are coming, it's much easier for us to enforce our laws.
Right. Now, I want to ask you about our relationship with the county for a second. Back in May, with the pressure on and lack of support for Dr. Nicole Quick, and the rush to open, we opened up a little too soon. We got ourselves in trouble as a county. Did the county inject politics into a health crisis, and did that cost lives here?
You know, that's a good question, Ed. I've never really thought about that. My focus was on what we're doing in Laguna Beach.
Right.
And if things were opening too quickly at the county level, you saw what we did. I thought what we did really was a model for what everybody should do. On one of the spring break weekends, it was on national TV about what was going on in Florida.
Right.
And I saw that on a Friday. On Saturday, I went down to Main Beach and saw what was going on here, and it was starting to look like Florida. I called the city manager. The next day, we had a closed session meeting by phone,
right,
because of COVID.
Right.
And we decided to shut the beaches down for some period of time. And then when it came back in a great way,
right,
from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. And then we slowly started opening. The purpose was multifold. One, it was clear that we didn't know exactly what to do.
Right.
And we were going to act, and we were going to be conservative about reacting and do it in as cautious a way as possible. But it was also clear density was a major problem. And this is before people were talking about social distancing.
Right.
It just became clear that density was going to be a major problem. And I think that we helped deal with that. By the time we were reopening the beaches, one, the medical facilities and the medical industry had time to gear up and react.
Right.
So even if cases were going to be coming, at least they could be dealt with. Plus, just lack of knowledge was changing. Now we were starting to understand what we needed to do with the masks, with the social distancing. But it's a very large society we have, not only Laguna and Orange County, but nationwide. And it's impossible to get 100% compliance 100% of the time. And frankly, I'm sure you've experienced this as well. Sometimes you walk out of the house and you forgot your mask.
Yeah. No, not me.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. No.
I've had to run back in because I now have multiple masks in my car. So
right.
I'm never in that position. But the point is that we may be seeing something that is either permanent or semi-permanent going forward. We're still adjusting to it.
Right.
So I wasn't all that concerned about the county in general. I was concerned about Laguna Beach and the ability to keep masses of people from outside from coming in.
Should masking be a political issue at all?
Depends how you define political. If you mean that people should be debating on it so that they can get elected, no, it should not be a political issue.
Right.
If you mean political, meaning that the elected leaders are discussing it and making a decision, sure.
Right. Should elected leaders be wearing masks as an example?
100%.
Okay.
And as I am campaigning in town and going door to door, I wear my mask 100% of the time.
Are you going to be wearing that KXFM mask I gave you?
You know, I'm not, you know, I have to check out the medical efficacy of it.
Okay. It works, baby.
Okay,
that works.
Real good. Great mask, and I do thank you.
Oh, no problem at all. We spoke a little earlier about balance, and being a member of the city council means you actually have to have a sense of balance. On this particular council, how do you strike a balance? And with the way the current makeup of the city council is balance possible?
First of all, from my perspective, I feel that council members need to look at themselves more as a judge than as an advocate. It's up to the public and our research, etc., to understand what the various positions are. And we are then supposed to make a judgment call based on all the evidence, sometimes against where we otherwise thought we were going to go. I think that people like Bob Whalen are able easily to do that. And I think that if you listen to council meetings, we have discussions.
Right.
This isn't just, okay, we heard the public, let's vote.
Right.
There are discussions. There are debates. And generally, we get, not saying all the time, but we generally get 5-0 votes. Not that that is necessarily the goal. It's not the goal. The
right.
goal is to have a vote and go forward. But the fact that we get 5-0 votes tells me that the discussion has led us to a conclusionary point that everybody agrees with. And so you have, I'm just saying what others have said to me, you have maybe Tony at one end and
right.
maybe Peter Blake at the other end. And you see them voting together 95% of the time.
Okay.
And so to me, that tells me that the discussions lead to a balanced conclusion.
Okay. Do we have, here in town and with the citizens, you hear it. You hear it each council meeting. You hear it every time a citizen speaks. Do we have two different visions in this town? Do you feel the citizens have two different visions for how we want to look?
It's hard to answer because I think that most people would agree that one of the things they love about Laguna Beach is the look and feel of the town. And when you drive along Coast Highway and you look to Laguna and then you get to an area like Newport Coast,
okay.
and I'm not trying to be critical of the appearance of Newport Coast, but it's a very different look and feel there. If I wanted that, I'd be living there.
Right.
So I live here for a different reason. I live in a house that was built in 1935 that is essentially, and Ed, I think you know the house, it's essentially untouched. Now, some people would say it's not very attractive. That's a subjective thing. But it's untouched. It's a small one-story structure, and I have no intention of changing that.
Right.
And I think we like that small-scale look and feel. So when you say, are we divided? I think where we're divided is not where we want to end up. It's how to get there.
Right.
And so, and that's often the case in political situations, and we lose sight of the fact that we're trying to get to the same place. We just have different ways of getting there. You know, my feeling on that is that you do need balance, going back to your prior question. And the balance, and some people have said, oh, you sound wishy-washy when you say it, but I have a real meaning to this. I want to balance property rights with the look and feel of our town.
Okay.
And the key into the look and feel of our town is design review board, which is not a popular thing.
Right.
And design review board, the critical concept, the critical doctrine is neighborhood compatibility. If you determine that a remodel or whatever is neighborhood compatible, then that almost by definition means we're retaining the look and feel. But within that envelope, so to speak,
right.
you should have the right to the kinds of nuances of the structure that you want to have. And so you walk in neighborhoods just by way of example, in Arch Beach Heights. And you'll see some place that looks exactly as it did when Arch Beach Heights started.
Right.
And you'll see something next door where it's been remodeled within the same envelope, retains that small-scale feel in town, but has a very different look. That's compatible.
Right. Is design review one of the hardest jobs on earth?
I don't feel I'm capable of doing it.
It's got to be. It's a tough gig. It's a tough gig.
Nobody's ever happy with you.
Right. You get beat up all the time.
Yeah, and it's from a public perspective, it's more divisive than council.
Right. Agreed. In your mind's eye, when you're sitting in traffic and your mind wanders a little bit, how do you see this city in 20 years? What do you see in your mind's eye? Will we still be fighting over the digester? I mean, what do you see in 20 years?
Well, I sure hope the digester issue is done because, and I'll get back to the broader question that you asked about the vision for the next 20 years. It's so ironic because we've had these debates over the last few years as to what constitutes something being historical and to what extent should something that is truly historical be preserved. And if there's any one structure in town that is truly historical, has historical importance, it's the digester. This was something that was done as part of, in the 1930s, part of the New Deal under FDR, and part of how we were putting people back to work. By putting them back to work, they were getting compensation and not only could pay for themselves, but could put money back into the economy. This is part of what saved this country.
Right.
And so it isn't even a matter of do you like it or not. It has a symbolism that for me resonates well beyond any of those questions. As far as the 20-year question, I think that, one, the town will look pretty much the same, except I think it'll be a little more spruced up. Because I think that many people are putting money into rehabbing where they are, whether it's commercial or residential. And so a town can start looking run down after a while if you fail to do that. I think money is being put into that, and so it's going to look a little bit better. I think traffic will be significantly better because I think that as a society, we're moving away from one person, one vehicle.
Right.
And so I think that mass transit will be better. Uber type things will be better, which by doing that, you don't have to be concerned about parking. Parking causes, but when people are looking for parking, it causes them to drive slowly and that backs up traffic. So I actually think that the parking and traffic issues will be better in 20 years, but 20 years is a very short period of time.
It is.
I've been in this town for 37 years, right. And to me, I'm still a newcomer. You know, it feels like yesterday that I came here.
Right.
And many of the places I knew and went to are exactly the same now as they were 37 years ago.
Will we be able to handle, let's say we have 6.5 million visitors a year now, or would we be able to handle a 10.5 million visitor 20 years from now?
Probably not.
Okay.
But I think that there comes a natural saturation point in the marketplace. So I think we'll be able to keep the visitor total. It's been relatively constant. I mean, if you go back to the 80s, when they used to have the big volleyball tournament, you remember this, Ed, when they used to have the giant blow-up beer bottle on Main Beach. You know, in that time period, we were getting over 6 million visitors a year. So even though times have changed, the population has increased, the number of visitors has been relatively constant, but the pressure from them has changed.
Okay. Now, I want to switch to Tuesday just quickly for you here. I find you to be a well-mannered professional and a thoughtful and deliberative public servant. You always have been. How did you react to the presidential debate on Tuesday?
Frankly, with disgust. This is the most powerful and important position in the world. And I'd like to see whoever is going to be president, whether it's Trump or Biden, I'd like to see them behave in a professional way. And I think it's very bad role modeling for the next generations coming up behind.
Right.
It's saying it's acceptable to do that. I'm not sure what the solution is. But I can tell you that I was looking forward to hearing a debate on the merits of issues. I couldn't even hear them half the time because they were both talking at the same time.
Right.
So I'm not going to be pointing fingers, taking sides.
Right.
I just say that I'm very disappointed. It's ironic because watch C-SPAN 3 at all on weekends. It's about American history. And so leading up to the first presidential debate, they were replaying the Kennedy-Nixon debates from 1960. And that was conducted at such an incredibly high intellectual level
right.
that to see that contrasted with what happened on Tuesday was very, very disappointing for me.
It was sad. It was sad to watch. I think America lost. I really do. And one more question. You're a member of the Republican Party.
I am a registered Republican.
Okay. I would call you a classic Republican in the fact that you're value-based, you're fiscally conservative, you're mindful and respectful of precedents and the rule of law. Is it a fair question to ask what happened to the rest of the party?
I haven't a clue as to what happened. What I can say is this. I'm a student of history, and it may sound self-serving to say this. I'm a Lincoln Republican.
Okay.
The party was founded on abolition. And it was founded on a belief that the Constitution is based on individual rights and that the purpose of, for example, the Bill of Rights is to ensure against the tyranny of the majority. I'm very concerned about individual rights. I'm not convinced that the rest of the party sees things the way I do,
right.
but I'm not enchanted with either of the parties.
Right. Okay. And I'm going to go back to decorum for a second and our city council meetings. What can you, Steve, specifically do to improve the discourse? And has the council as a body done enough?
I'll answer that in two separate ways. First of all, as you recall, I'm very involved in the kindness movement. I'm even president of the local group, yes. which is associated with the World Kindness
Shoddy
Organization.
Shoddy Porkashev. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes.
But our belief is that we spread kindness not only through our words, but through our behavior. And we want to be good role models. We don't want to be the kindness police. I think that's a very dangerous thing. I'm not going to go around town and point fingers at people and say they're not acting right.
Right.
So from that perspective, that is a somewhat passive perspective. As far as the council itself, I believe in protocol, and I believe that the mayor is in charge. And so I believe it is up to the mayor during meetings and otherwise to not only set the tone, but to be sort of the teacher in the room. And so each mayor will have a different style. Bob right. has had his style. I think if you've listened to some of the more recent meetings, and granted, it's been COVID-oriented. We're not physically all together.
Right.
But he, I thought, over the last 6 months or so has been, since we said protocol is for you, Bob, as mayor to take charge, I think that most people in town have told me they feel he's done a good job of that. If I were fortunate enough to be reelected, and as mayor pro tem, if I am fortunate enough to be chosen by my colleagues to be mayor, I'm a little more strong-armed than I would describe as Bob.
Okay.
And so I will not tolerate certain behavior by council members or by the public. And so, again, maybe, Ed, it's our shared vision from Brooklyn, but,
right.
you know, I just think that... again, it's my style to, you know, you've described me as being very gentle and nice, but I have a tough side.
Right.
And I don't like anybody trying to bully me or anybody else.
Right.
And I stand up to that firmly.
Now, who shaped you growing up? Who did you look up to? Who were your big influences growing up?
I think my two biggest, well, first of all, my dad. Okay. Clear, you know, apart from public figures,
right.
there's just no doubt. And unfortunately, he passed away about 2.5 years ago. But he was the most incredible role model imaginable. This was somebody who grew up in an extraordinarily impoverished environment, didn't go beyond high school, was brilliant, far smarter than I am, had a very clear vision of how to live his life, was in an environment where it would have been very easy for him to take certain easy ways out,
right.
and he didn't do that. And so, you know, I don't think I've ever lived up to what he was, but clearly he was my role model. And I'm not sure, sadly, that I ever made it that clear enough to him. I did write an article about him for the Orange County Register back in around 1998, but, you know, I'm not sure I ever communicated it as well to him as I should have. But my political role models were Abraham Lincoln and Bobby Kennedy.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, you couldn't get better political role models than those two.
Well, and I'm if you want to cry at a political speech, watch the tapes of Bobby Kennedy's, for me, two greatest speeches. One, the night that Martin Luther King was assassinated, where he spoke in Indianapolis and basically prevented a riot in that city. But it was the nature of his words and the tone in which he gave it. And I can't compare to him as a public speaker, and our styles are very different. But boy, that was close to perfection, which was matched by a speech he gave in South Africa during apartheid, where he was not exactly a welcome figure by the powers that be at that time.
Right.
And the way he not only spoke, but how he responded to very hostile questions from the audience was just a model for how a politician should be.
Can I take you back to the night that he was shot? And you were probably a young man, very young man at the time.
I was actually a McCarthy guy at the time.
Okay.
But it was shocking. But I was living in Brooklyn,
right,
and the actual shooting occurred when I was already asleep.
Okay.
So I didn't find out till the next morning.
Yeah.
By then, it was very clear that he was going to pass.
Right.
And it was shocking because it wasn't just. 1968 was one heck of a year, Ed.
Yeah.
We started out with Tet. You have LBJ saying he's not going to run. Bobby gets into the race. Martin Luther King is assassinated. Bobby is assassinated. We had the riots in the street in Chicago during the Democratic National Convention. You have the very odd election with Nixon, Humphrey, and Wallace.
Right.
And then at the very end of the year, you have Apollo 8.
Right.
Where for the first time in human history, we've escaped the gravitational force of the Earth and we're circling around the moon. Very, very odd year.
Never been another year like it. Even with all of the things we have going on right now, and we had the Vietnam War at the time, everything. Yeah, so you're right. So sometimes a candidate can be painted unfairly or facts about them can be misrepresented. Anything like that happened with you? And if so, is there a moment, an opportunity you'd like to clear anything up?
Yeah. There have been moments like that.
Mm-hmm.
They were in 2016. There have been this year during the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
I expect that there will be more of it.
Right.
Because the fact that I'm a very independent voice on the council,
right,
I'm someone who you can't necessarily predict how I'm going to vote because I look at each situation differently. It makes me an underdog every time I run. But and that independence is abhorred by the big PACs in town. So I don't have any big PACs that are supporting me. No big PACs are giving me money. This is a very, very independent campaign. But as far as my response, I think the people in this town know who I am.
Okay.
They know that I'm honest. And so when claims of my not being honest come out, they know it's not true.
Right. Okay. As a council member, whether now or 30 years ago, any decisions or votes that you later regretted?
The Longy project out on the in the canyon area, in retrospect, is probably bigger than it should have been.
Okay.
And so I was kind of the deciding vote. Kudos to Bob Whalen. He saw that he was going to vote for it, but he wanted it a little smaller. I think I should have adopted his vision.
Right.
And so that's probably my biggest regret.
Okay. Okay. And let's say someone has just come into town. We have brand new residents here. They've been here less than a couple of weeks. What do you want them to know about living in Laguna Beach?
About living in Laguna
Beach?
About
living in Laguna Beach.
It's a throwback. You know, as much as it's a modern town, because we have incredible people who live here. Some of the biggest movers and shakers on the planet live in Laguna Beach, some full-time, some part-time. Despite that, there's still a real small-town sense.
Right.
And that's what I was looking for. You know, Ed, you and I come from Brooklyn.
I'm actually from the Bronx, that's okay.
It's close enough.
Yeah,
Bronx was even scarier than Brooklyn.
We're brothers in arms here. Right?
Highly dense population areas. And I wanted to come someplace where it was less dense. On the other hand, my wife is from West Virginia, where this looks like a real megalopolis to her compared to where she came from in West Virginia. So we kind of settled somewhere in the middle. But as far as somebody coming into town, there's a combination of spectacular coastline beauty, the small-scale development of the town, the topography of the town. There aren't many areas in the world where you're next to world-class beaches, and less than a mile away, you've got 1,000-foot-high hills. Right. So it's just, and the weather here is unparalleled. So I have been around the world through my career, and I've never been someplace that's better.
Right. I love hearing that. It makes me want to move here all over again. Thank you for that. I've been here 25 years. I want to leave and come back. What should the voters right now, we get our ballots next week. Ballots get mailed out on October 5th. People will be filling those ballots out. What should the voters know about this next term of yours? And with that, is this the last rodeo for you?
Yeah, I made a decision that, and I'm not going to be Teddy Roosevelt. I wish I had his intellect, but who made an incredible mistake in 1904 after he won election. It's a form of re-election, but he came in because of the assassination of McKinley, and he said that night in 1904, "This is it. I'm not going to run for another term." Biggest single mistake he ever made. Biggest single regret he ever had. So I'm not going to say absolute, but it is my intention, whether I win or lose, to kind of fade from the scene. I think it's time for a new generation to take over. I've been involved since 1989, so it's now 31 years. Right. And although I still will always have a love and interest in what's going on here, I think that there are a lot of young people. I'm not going to name names now, but I could name names. And right. There are a lot of young people that are itching to be in charge and have their vision take over. And I think it's their turn. So this is going to be my last time. I wanted to run this time because I felt we have unparalleled threats and challenges to the city right now as a combination of what's been going on with COVID, the continued influx of tourists, the large development projects that have been proposed. I feel that I'm uniquely qualified to help on that because I was involved intimately and on the council at the time of the Montage development, which I think is the model for how a large development should occur. So I felt that a combination of my philosophy on how to do things, my experience, and my unparalleled record of being effective on the council, I felt it was needed right now.
Okay.
So that's why I did it this time. But I feel that after we get through these crises, it's time for a new generation.
All right. And before we head out, anything you want to tell the voter?
I just love serving everybody. And as I go door to door and talk to people, I'm just amazed at how many people, one, know exactly what's going on. This is the most intelligent population I can imagine. It's, I'm sure if I went to some other areas in Orange County, they couldn't tell you what's going on locally. This population, they know the details as well or better than I do. And how gracious people are. Right. Obviously, people who support me are going to be nice to me. But even people who say, I don't support you, I'm not voting for you. But boy, they're so nice. I've had so few situations where it wasn't really pleasant interactions with people. And that gives me hope for going forward.
Good. Steve Dichterow, Mayor Pro Tem, City Council member running for re-election. Be safe on the campaign trail. And thank you for visiting us today.
Well, Ed, I hope this is not the last time you and I get together.
I know it won't be. Steve Dichterow, thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you, Ed.
It's the Mornings with Ed show.